tradition and some apocryphal gospels tell us that she had midwives, but we don't know for sure. But what we do know is that after she gave birth, some visitors appeared. Three wise men. Actually, if we're looking just at Scripture, we don't actually know that there were just three, or if they were particularly wise, or entirely all men. All of that came from tradition and was added later. The actual word, and one that many newer translations are using, is magi. These were astrologers, or magicians, healers, and scientists, or even Zoroastrian priests from Persia or India. And after some questionable science that explains how they got to the house where Jesus was born, the magi find the child with Mary. Then they proceed to give him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. This is the familiar story that we've heard. And much has been made about these three gifts throughout the course of history. Beginning in about the 3rd century, Irenaeus saw the gifts like this. There was gold, a gift given to a monarch. Frankincense, which was burned in the temple to honor God. And myrrh, a spice used to prepare a body for burial. Now, we have the privilege of knowing the fullness of Jesus' story, how it ends. And so Irenaeus' reasoning is very good. These are all possibilities that speak fully to who this baby Jesus will be. But let's be honest. In reality, these aren't terribly useful gifts for a new mother or her newborn baby. Casserole would have been better. And also, it makes me wonder, what happened to these gifts? Because surely the life of a poor carpenter and his young wife and newborn child would have been vastly different after receiving a treasure chest full of gold. We don't hear about any of that. But this last couple weeks, as I've been doing some reading, I stumbled across another theory, one that I actually like a lot. And it's this. What if these were medicinal gifts? Gifts that were used to treat the trauma that is the whole birth process, so that Mary would be able to be more present for her child. Saffron and turmeric both have been referred to as gold, particularly in the biblical period. They were both wildly expensive spices with known medical benefits. And at the time, they were actually worth more than their weight in gold. And saffron is from Persia, and turmeric is from India, which are both possibilities for the Magi. Medically, they both help to balance hormones, to act as an antidepressant, and decrease inflammation. And so I wonder, perhaps this was the Magi's way of helping Mary to beat the baby blues or postpartum depression, so that she could be more present and bond more fully with Jesus. Frankincense, as well, is medically useful. It has anti-anxiety properties. It fights inflammation, and it has antiseptic properties as well. Anybody who's been around a newborn probably can attest that they are stressful and that birth is a traumatic process. So something that could reduce anxiety and also help to keep things clean, that's going to make both the mother and the baby very happy. And then there's myrrh. It has been used historically for its antibacterial properties. And even at the time of Jesus, it was commonly used by midwives to dab on the exposed end of the umbilical cord to prevent infection. So one way to think of these magi, these visitors from the East, is like a medical team. After the birthing is over, they swoop in and they make sure that the mother and baby are doing well and that they have all of the things they need to succeed. We have no idea at all how traumatic Jesus' birth was on Mary, how much she had to endure, or how much healing she would be left with. But no matter, like all births, it was dangerous. Even though Jesus is born, both Mary and Jesus are still at risk. And the Magi honor Jesus and aid his survival by caring for his mother. And these gifts that they bring ultimately are for Jesus, even though they're given to Mary, because they help Mary to survive, to be there for her son. They are the makeshift doctors treating Mary, because without Mary, Jesus had no future. Mary's life means that Jesus can have life. Now, Mary would have known when she agreed at the Annunciation to have this baby that it was a potential death sentence. After all, it would have been unheard of at the time for someone not having a friend or family member that had died or lost a child or both during pregnancy and childbirth. For most of human history, childbirth has been the leading cause of death for women. And in many places, it still is. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for those one loves. This is the line that Jesus tells his disciples in the upper room before he is taken and killed by the Roman authorities. And I can't help but believe that he learned this first and foremost from his mother, right here, in her act of self-giving love toward God, who is also her child. And following in her example, we are called to do this as well. Each person in the world, each person that we meet, is made in the image and the likeness of God. And as such, we are to care for them without reservation. Mary is no meek, mild, and lowly waif, despite what the Christmas carols say. She stares down the most dangerous thing that she can do and does it full of grace. She turns herself over to grow God, to nourish God, to care for God, to birth God, to feed God, and to raise God. She changed God's dirty diapers. She held God when God cried. And she supported God through God's ministry on earth, trial, and death. She wept at God's grave. And she rejoiced at God's rising. This is the reality of the God made flesh. God dwelt among us. Nothing ever, ever has been asked more of one single human being than was asked of Mary. And all we are left to say is Hail Mary.